It's Friday, October 9th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey, everyone, got a great show lined up for you tonight. Yes, it's going to be a lot of fun. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume, because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island here in Honolulu, Hawaii. How are all of you? Have a great weekend. Had a great weekend here, and extra day off for many of you that are in the United States. I know some of you had to work today. I know that a lot of the offices were still open. I know my wife went to a dental appointment early today and actually got in to see her doctor. So not everyone took Columbus Day off, but wow, I guess I'm going to catch you up on what's going on here. But of course, first, I want to welcome all of you to the show. And for those of you checking out the show for the very first time, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, check on the archive podcast via the podcast link. Sign up for our newsletter that's available in the third column of the website, so you get the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. And of course, all of the Ohana here that are long-term subscribers, hey, thanks for being part of the family. Well, kind of getting back to normal here. The office is a wreck. So I guess it's the status quo. We are very, very close to finding a place to live. So that's good news. And if that all goes through, then I will be having the Packers in here in the next couple of weeks to load everything up and move us to our new place that we're going to live in. So I'm pretty excited about that. So is my wife. And I'll be quite honest with you, I'm ready to get it behind me. And but otherwise, everything's good here. Still having a great time with my mom. She's, of course, in from Michigan. But I tell you, it's very rapidly coming to a close. She actually flies out Wednesday afternoon to go back to Detroit, where Auntie's going to be picking her up and running her back to where we live. Or where she lives, anyway. And she has to get turning there. She's got a cooler full of apples that need to be delivered. So that's weighing on her mind a little bit. But Friday, had my official Navy retirement ceremony. So now I am, I guess, what you would call officially finished. And, you know, Murphy's Law strikes no matter what. We had everything perfectly set up. I had things wired. I had my wireless mic hooked up. Had everything good to go. I got a guy to run my camera. I had everything up. I said, okay, I can just hit record. Everything is, you know, just move around with wherever we need to go. And for some reason, the guy that was recording hit the white balance lever on the camcorder, which is on the side, kind of an obscure spot. And the entire ceremony is washed out. I am quite literally devastated. We've got lots of still pictures, so that is a good thing. Had a photographer there taking still pictures, but I would have just have been better to leave the camera, sit there, and run, and not have anybody messing with it. But you know, that's the way the ball bounces sometimes. Now my sister-in-law was here, and she had her camera going for some of the retirement ceremony, so we're going to be capturing that. But gosh, it really made everything at the end going to go, oh, why did that happen? So anyway, we got all done, came back to the house, had a bunch of people in, we had a big reception afterwards as well, put on a heck of a spread, lots of food and non-adult beverages for everyone to drink. And then later on in the evening, had some things here at the house for a couple of family members that are in from Japan, and it was really, really, really enjoyable. Still have a house full of people, so that's going pretty well, as well as it can be expected, I guess. But on Saturday, I just had to get some things worked out. I had to work on some ad campaigns. So I really sat here for about 8 hours. I hope to have been done by like noon, but I actually finished about 3:30 working on the next quarter's ad campaigns and getting all that information out to, gosh, literally hundreds of podcasters. So they're all set, and we're running off and running on next quarter. Actually, I had people already most engaged, but I just had to do some wrap-up stuff, I guess. And let's see, where else have I got in here? My little notes here. Did have a couple of interesting emails and disturbed me a little bit about some commentary I got some people on the podcast awards ceremony. I think some people watched it on Ustream and were commenting on everything, and there was people, I don't know exactly what, but some people weren't necessarily too happy with the way the podcast awards ceremony went this year. And really, I just, you know, I haven't had the energy to respond, but the room that we were set up in was just mammoth. It was as big as a aircraft hangar. And, you know, it was huge. I mean, 3 football fields or something like that. That's how big it was. It was a monster room. And here we are, you know, trying to set up to, you know, have cameras, lights, have everyone focused in, be able to get people on the live stream, still have people in the audience see. And it definitely was a challenge with no stage. So got some feedback. People were complaining about it, but it was what it was, because in all reality, you know, the budget, we don't have a big budget for this type of thing. This year we came out of pocket quite a little bit on the awards ceremony. So, you know, it's we do what we can do. And the process is what it is. And, you know, I've always said, if people think they can do a better deal, then move forward and do your own gig. It's a lot of work. And quite frankly, you know, when you get a few comments from people like that, it makes you like, well, you know, no one appreciates it. And there's other people that make comments on their blogs about it. And I don't know, maybe it's partly jealousy, partly, you know, I don't know. It just drives me crazy. It really, really does. And there's no perfect process, but I am determined just to say, you know, so what? And we'll see what we do for Vegas. We may do something different this year. But I don't think people are going to want to have to pay to attend the awards ceremony. We're going to have, you know, they want to cash out money. That's fine. They can. But, you know, I help pay for the food that was in there for people to enjoy that came in for the awards ceremony. And we tried to do as best we could, you know, and it's, hey, it's, you know, it's a, there was 2 of us, you know, taking care of all this here. So plus all the people that were supporting. But anyway, if any of you are listening out there that had negative comments, you know, if you've got suggestions and you want to help and you want to run it, hey, raise your hand. I'll put you to work, and then you can figure out how much work this thing is. And enough on that. Okay, hey, I've been generally pleased with Thunderbird so far. The only thing I don't like about it is that it will check my email, but it only checks the primary account all the time. The rest of the time, you have to click this like little pull-down tab, and you have to click Get All New Messages instead of just the top account. Drives me crazy. Is there a way to work around that so that it checks all accounts on a regular basis where I don't have to keep clicking that button? It really, really, really bothers me. And then the junk situation and dealing with junk email, it definitely Outlook beats the living pants off of Thunderbird. So maybe some of you that are using Thunderbird on a regular basis can give me some tips on how to improve the junk mail capabilities of this thing, because it's junk. So, all right, what else do I have? I think that's all I've got in my little list here. I got 3 or 4 voicemails to play tonight, plenty of comments as well, but let's take care of a little business here before we get kicked off into tonight's commentary. GoDaddy.com makes it easy to customize your own virtual dedicated server. Choose one of three popular plans or select your own Linux or Windows servers with all the plan options you need. Plus, check out the domain names that you can get over there, shared hosting accounts, dedicated servers as well. You can get some discounts by using the code TODD when you check out to save an additional 10% on your order. Get your PC internet at GoDaddy.com. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Geek 5 will save you 15% on your order of $20 or more. And another great code that people have been using recently is the code CENTRAL, C-E-N-T-R-A-L, and that'll save you an additional $10 off your order of $50 or more. So thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. All right, lots of interesting discussions with Annie McCaskey on some upcoming roundtables and what we're going to be doing there. We're going to be changing the format up on that a little bit. We're going to be talking about that in another week or so. I got to share those. As a matter of fact, most of the folks on the Tech Podcast Network are not even aware what we're going to do, but it's going to be a good change for everyone that participates. So we want to make sure that everyone checks out what we're doing, and we will make an announcement of what we're going to be doing there. Of course, all of those live interactive events are hosted by and sponsored by GoToMeeting. And while I use GoToMeeting for all of the roundtables, you know, here in the office today, I had a call. And was talking with a gentleman on the phone. He says, you know, I really wish we could look at these papers in more detail. I said, yeah, we can. And I sent him a little IM with a link, and we loaded up the web conferencing solution GoToMeeting, and we shared the document that we're looking at and walked through all the cognizant points. And essentially had this, you know, little mini meeting, virtual meeting online. It was really, really cool. And you, too, can do that by trying it yourself for free for 30 days. Just by visiting gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. And of course, a big, big thanks to the sponsors here. They really do allow me to do what I do and be full time here with this show. And your support is greatly appreciated when you try the products, buy domains, you know, etc. So spread the word. We definitely appreciate, again, your utilization and working with our sponsors as well. Okay, what have I got for you tonight here? I've got, you know, even though it's been a semi-holiday in the United States, I've got some interesting news that have made the headlines that we're going to get into. And I had gotten a couple of comments from some folks saying, hey, have I heard enough on the iPhone? I'll lump that stuff together so that I can fast forward through it. I'll try to do that, but generally it really doesn't work with the way I lay out my show. When I'm laying out the show, it's as I find stuff, I load it up in FeedDeem, and I just stack it up, and it falls where it may. And that's why sometimes I kind of skip around. And, you know, just to be honest with you, it doesn't take me as much time. So I'll try to clump that stuff together the best I can, but I think we only got one thing on the iPhone tonight. But we'll be moving through that relatively quickly. But the first thing up I have tonight is an article on Ars Technica talking about the FCC declining to investigate the NSA/Telco link. And if you remember earlier in the year, there was a big brouhaha about the NSA apparently having asked AT&T to allow them to have some sort of interception equipment stuck in some of their main switching gear, and I think it was in areas where the, you know, essentially the cables were going out to overseas connections. And I guess that was the kind of the gist of it. But Representative Ed Markley, Democrat of Massachusetts, who heads the House Committee on Telecommunications and the Internet, had been asking the FCC to launch an investigation. Apparently, the FCC chairman had asked the Attorney General for legal guidance on whether such a proceeding would jeopardize national security. Now, of course, I'm sure that the, you know, what they were doing there was, you know, trying to catch bad guys doing bad things. And, of course, in alliance and in regards to the war on terror, I can't imagine it being anything else. But the essentially what it came down to is the FCC said, no, we're not going to investigate, and they don't believe anyway that any serious offenses happen with private U.S. citizens having data intercepted. So I think in time we'll probably find out more about this, but for right now, the FCC is not moving forward. And I'm sure many of you, there's probably two camps. There's probably many of you that absolutely abhor this, and there's probably a camp of you that says, well, if you're not doing anything illegal, there's nothing to worry about. And you know, I understand, and to a certain extent, I guess, the importance of trying to keep America safe, but I'm pretty firm believer in, you know, our constitutional rights and, you know, talking about fair use and our privacy and all that stuff. So I guess, I don't know. I'm sure all of you have an opinion on this, and I have a pretty strong one, I guess, but I think I'm just going to for the first time ever, have kind of a no comment and let you guys weigh in. And let me know what you think here. You can call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365 and tell me what you think about the FCC declining to investigate this issue. But anyway, let's move forward here. He found a good article. Actually, it's not an article, but it's kind of we'll see what you think. It's over on howtosplitinatom.com. And what they've done is they went out and searched all the different tech ads that have been made in the recent past and not so recent past, and ranked them 1 to 10. And the only one I really want to point your attention to is the first one in the link in the show notes. And the title of this video link is That Steve Ballmer. And he does it in a parody type that I think you'll get a big kick out of. And for those of you that have been around, were around for Windows 1.0, I think you'll even get a chuckle yourselves, and maybe some Mac users as well. So check the video out on this page. Link will be in the show notes, of course. And tell me, is that really Steve Ballmer, or was that just somebody making a parody many years later? All right, this gal that was essentially lost to the RIAA is now in a really, she's in a world of hurt. She earns $36,000 a year. She has a $220,000 judgment against her. She has decided to appeal the ruling. And so now she's got a website set up. I guess a fan set this up over at www.freejamie.com. There's a big old PayPal button on the webpage, and they're donating to, I don't know if it's her legal fund or help her to pay off the RIAA or whatever it is, but they set this up. When was the last update to this? It must be today. It looks like so far total amount donated was $3,853. Wow, that's not a, oh, she's got a long ways to go. She really does. And now that she's going to appeal this, what it's going to end up happening is that the RIAA will probably, instead of maybe working out some sort of a deal with her, is probably going to go after legal fees and everything else. So she is, her goose is really cooked at this point. But what I think is really going to happen here is that would-be file sharers are going to sit up and go, whoa, 220 grand? I better not fight the RIAA. I better just pay them. So I'm sure that's what the RIAA is counting on, and I'm sure they're going to be using that in their propaganda against people that are actually file sharing out there. So reading through this case a little closer over the weekend, you know, the evidence against her was pretty overwhelming by what has been reported. And why she fought them in the first place is beyond me. She should have just paid. She'd have definitely not been out as much money. And so now here she has got this PayPal button with $3,853 donated to it. And long, 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 long ways from $220,000 settlement, which is, you know, still in my opinion is a ridiculous amount. And obviously the jury did not have a clue here when it came to the penalties. All right, moving on. The Google phone will take on Microsoft, not Apple. And this is the rumor control about the Apple phone that's been flying around for months. But there's an article in the New York Times saying that Google has developed a few prototype handsets for internal testing, and what they're really working on is a mobile operating system that will go up against Windows Mobile. So this is a, this is a more speculation. I'm sure there is a variety of truth to this, but we will see what happens in the coming months if Google actually releases a phone and what it looks like. But the New York Times is basically saying they've had a whole army of top engineers working on this thing. So we really, you know, we could be in for another revolutionary or evolutionary mobile device when the Google phone comes out. So the G phone, that'll kind of be kind of cool, huh, to call it the G phone. And maybe we can start the G line of products. There's also some good stuff when we're talking about Google later that is not necessarily positive, but it's some things that make you go, Okay, a video is out of the rocket-powered X-Wings flight, and very interesting death. Some Star Trek enthusiast built a 1/2-scaled rocket-powered X-Wing fighter. And they had, let's see if I'm looking at the picture correctly, they had 4 pretty powerful rockets attached to it. And the initial takeoff photo looks absolutely awesome. But I will save the good part for you when you come over and click on the link in the show notes to go to the website and watch the actual 2-minute and 30-second video. And it's well worth the watch. Watch the video. Don't scroll down to, I'm giving it away here, don't scroll down to the bottom of the page and look at the pictures of the of the flight. So watch the video and enjoy. So, you know, they spent a lot of money on this thing, and it looks amazing when it takes off, that's for sure. All right, a California man is seeking a class action lawsuit over iPhone breaking lock-in. And that's all we need to really say. You knew it was going to happen, and it definitely has. So we'll see how many people jump on this class action lawsuit. Another link I'm going to put you up here is a video on a 5-Minute Life Videopedia website. It's a way to do a new way to hand out your business card. And be honest with you, the way they're showing to do this business card trick and handing your business card to someone won't fly here, won't fly in Japan, but it would be a pretty cool, something to do at a trade show or a little party trick that you may have. So if you want a new way to hand out your business card, definitely check this website out. Practice. I tried doing it here in the office a couple of times, and I just definitely don't want to change my day job here because I will never make a very good magician. Over on designvitality.com, if you are, you know, big into Ajax right now, this is really, really cool. 43 exceptionally useful Ajax applications. And we know that Ajax is exploding all over the place on websites right now. So some of these little widgets and the things that they've came up with that they're providing the code for is really off the chart. They're really, really cool. And I'm sure all of you that are managing your own websites will get, will have one or two of these that you'll want to use on your website. I see a couple on here that I think will be incorporated in my site here very, very shortly just because they are really cool and very useful. All right, tonight there will be a couple of links in the show notes to of some articles I haven't covered. One is the right brain versus the left brain. I'll let you guys go over and check that out and be the judge on the validity of the article or not. I did have one more iPhone thing, so I apologize. It does appear that the iPod Touch version 1.1 has been jailbroken, and some apps are being ported again to both the iPhone and the iPod Touch, so good on that. So some of you are going to be able to run your third-party apps that have upgraded here pretty shortly, it looks like. Okay, moving on here. Found a very, very cool tool. How many of you always, you carry on the road with you a a USB adapter, you know, the big USB plug for your laptop, and then it has, you know, 2 or 3 feet of cable, then it has the small little itty bitty USB connector on the other way, on the other end. It's the mini USB portion. How many of you wish, gosh, how come, you know, why do I need this big long cable? Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Well, for those times that you don't, there's a product called out called the Docky. It's a mini USB to USB connector, and it saves space. And it's relatively as small as a pair of fingernail clippers. And it all it does is it outfolds, you disconnect it from one another, and it's just a little on a little swivel joint. A very, very cool, great little product. This will definitely make it into my computer bag. A couple of these will. And it's going to be, you know, just saves on space. All this stuff is, it comes out like this, saves on space. So very, very cool for having this product come out. I don't know what it retails for, but whatever the cost is, I'm sure it's going to definitely be well worth it for those of us that are road junkies. Over on Niall Kennedy's weblog, Google has released a standalone desktop widget engine. This is new today. This Google desktop widgets can now be embedded in your iGoogle personal start page. This new functionality adds essentially operating system level functionality, and you can do things like CPU utilization. It'll play tracks in iTunes. It's going to do battery indicators. So pretty cool on this, and it works in Windows 2000 XP and Vista, and it's essentially a application that sits on your desktop that they're toting. Let's hear what they say here. It's a bridge, the desktop and web world. So I don't know if this is a piece of software that is really going to appeal to me overall. Some of you it may appeal to. I don't understand why. If you're on the web, you're on the web. You know, why do you need to have some desktop widget that is bridging that? It's, you know, you have your browser open, have it open to a tab on the page, but well, this is what Google has released today, so it's available. There's a article that I got a link to from Dave Weiner's website at scripting.com talking about, essentially it's an article about something is rotten in the counters of FeedBurner. Talks about a way to hack the FeedBurner subscriber list, subscriber numbers, and relatively easy to get over on FeedBurner, it looks like, on how many subscribers your RSS feed has. So this is probably not good news. I'm sure the folks at FeedBurner will be plugging this hole pretty quick. But anyway, folks over at Italy have been gaming the system a little bit and getting themselves raised into the top 100 by exploiting this particular hack that's out there for FeedBurner. Okay, next up, there's some news on the Sprint/Nextel front. The chairman and CEO of Sprint Nextel, Gary Forsey, has stepped down, and effective, I guess, immediately. So it looks like the Sprint Nextel board of directors is going to be forming and looking for a new CEO. I guess this is on the heels that the company is going to report a net loss of approximately 337,000 post-paid subscribers in the third quarter, and they are going to have a consolidated operating revenue for 2007 that is going to be expected to be slightly below the range of previously provided guidance of $11 to $11.5 billion. So this is probably part of the reason why he is on his way out. So we'll see what happens with Sprint. You know, Sprint's doing some good things in the, obviously, in the EVDO space. I'm a big fan of their service. I really, really am. I can't talk any more highly about it than what I am right now and giving it a, you know, blazingly positive recommendation. I wish I could get paid on the number of people that have converted to a Sprint EVDO service or using it. But, you know, they definitely have some challenges when it comes to, you know, being competitive at some point in their phone services. So I know many of you are probably Sprint customers and probably very happy with their service. I know that I had been a mobile phone user of theirs for many years before I switched primarily to T-Mobile for my phone accounts or my mobile, you know, voice accounts. But, We'll see what happens with the new, what happens with the new chairman that they'll get hired. Hopefully they have success in finding someone that can help Sprint continue to forge ahead. You know, Sprint's going to be doing some cool stuff. I can't wait to really see what their, what their game plan is to working with Clearwire and some of that stuff that they announced earlier in the year. All right, back to Google. Over on codinghorror.com, yeah, this guy, he really hit a home run on this blog article. And the article's title is YouTube, The Big Copyright Lie. And I know many of you are YouTube fans. I am. I watch several videos off YouTube probably every day. I know that they've had a big problem with copyright on their website. But this is the thing that he calls out for YouTube, and I want to read this to you because it just shows the hypocrisy of some of the things that are going on over there. So on their upload page, you find this disclaimer. Do not upload any TV shows, music videos, music concerts, or commercials without permission unless they consist entirely of content you created yourself. Please refer to the copyright tips page for some guidelines and links to help you determine whether your video infringes someone else's copyright. Now, if you take a minute to read the YouTube's copyright tips page, it's full of gems like these. I'm going to read several of them to you. It doesn't matter how long or short the clip is or exactly how it got to YouTube. If you taped it off cable, videotaped your TV screen, or downloaded it from some other website, it is still copyrighted and requires the copyright's owner permission to distribute. Number two, it doesn't matter whether or not you give credit to the owners, authors, songwriters, it is still copyright. Number three, it doesn't matter that you're not selling the video for money, it is still copyright. Number four, it doesn't matter whether or not the video contains a copyright notice, it's still, so it goes on and on and on here. Now, the point he makes, if you think back on all the videos you watched on YouTube, and how many of them contain any quote-unquote, any original content, then let's be real. By YouTube's own rules, YouTube cannot exist, but yet it does. And I quote this right off this guy's website. It's hypocrisy in that YouTube, it says, oh, we can't manage and monitor everything, so only that stuff that gets reported as being a copyright violation gets taken down. So, this guy, and I think we've all kind of realized that for a long time, and I think we can also realize why many of the main content creators out there, mainstream content creators, are so upset at YouTube and other sites that, that have this type of activity going on. But the real question I think I'm asking, and it, going beyond what this guy wrote on codinghorror.com, is that what site is out there that does not contain copyrighted material? Is there any sites out there that contain original user-generated content that guarantees unequivocally that there's nothing on the websites that's, infringes on copyright? At the same time, I also say, hey, come on, what about fair use? Google in this statement here has essentially eliminated any possibility that, they have not indicated at all that there's any type of fair use allowed. There is a certain amount of fair use of materials you can do as long as you give attribution that under the law you're allowed to do, especially if you're reporting on something, making commentary, making comments in reference to something, and you have a clip of that reference in there. Again, with attribution, fair use is allowed, but by YouTube's own policies, I would say 90 or 95% of all the videos, if really came down to brass tacks, would have to be removed from the service. And really what Google is doing here through YouTube is they're paying lip service to copyright. And while I wish everyone would be able to do what they want to do, I also respect the rights of those copyright creators to do with their content as they please and keeping it on or off sites that they please as well. So it is kind of funny. It really, really is. If you look at the if you know, you read through this guy's comments and you go into the comment section, you know, people are brutal. I mean, just brutally honest and, smacking down YouTube and the other, you know, of course, the fanboys are on the other side of the fence saying, hey, you know, tough, you know, we're going to do what we want to do because we know the large majority of videos are not going to be pulled down off the site. All right, have that link up for you in the show notes. Good read. What's your comments? Voicemail hotline, 619-342-7365, or comments to geeknews@gmail.com. Moving on here over at CRN.com, there's a great article by Ed Moulton, and he is reporting on Microsoft Steve Ballmer saying within a speech to an audience in the UK, he essentially said, Google reads customers' email as part of a failed bid to drive ad-based revenue. It's essentially, he's coming off the top rope basically saying, hey, you know, all you folks out there that are using Gmail, you do realize Google is reading your email. Now, I think we all probably realize that they're not physically reading each email, but a computer is, and it's building algorithms up to give targeted advertising to you while you're using the Gmail interface. And I think most of us understand the, the cost of using Gmail is essentially privacy back to the Google search engine, the internal search engine that drives, you know, advertising to you as it feels it needs to have you matched up with a demographic that you fit into. So, but good article here, and it looks like Microsoft is basically at this point gaming up to get in the ad game in a big way. They're predicting that within 3 years, 25% of their revenue is going to be coming from advertising, and that their live services with Hotmail and all the other online stuff that they have is going to start making an impact, and kind of almost in Google's face saying, hey, we're not going to be evil. So, you know, who knows? Microsoft may win the day in the end if people start to become more concerned about Google's dominance and the Googleplex. You know, we don't want the Googleplex to gain self-awareness as is expected in 2011. So, you know, something to think about really, really is. How many of you are using Gmail and fully realize that Google is indexing all of your email to target advertising to you? If you do realize that, if you haven't realized that, you need to go back and do some search on the internet. Just go to Google, do Gmail privacy, and I think you'll find some eye-opening articles on this. But, I'm a first admit, I use Gmail, and we use Gmail's, their commercial services as well. It works really, really great. But at the same point, it's a mitigated risk for us knowing that, no one's really physically reading the email. Now, the only thing that is a little bit disturbing is that all of that information could potentially be aggregated and sold to the highest bidder. Now, I'm not saying the emails would be, but a lot of the stuff they've learned from when you visit Google.com, you go into Gmail, when you log into the affiliates or AdSense or whatever you're doing with Google, whatever services you're using, if you're using their doc program or, anything, they're little by little learning a lot more about you and I on a daily basis, and the software's getting more sophisticated to, when I log in now, many times I'll see stuff that, if I wasn't probably anti-click through, I would probably click on. Because they've gotten pretty good at targeting stuff within the interface that goes for what I'm kind of looking for out there. Now, moving on to a little more YouTube news, it appears that YouTube videos are going to be coming to Google AdSense. So Google's going to be start offering YouTube videos as part of the AdSense program starting today. And the video units will display two kinds of advertising, ads contextual to the site and ads contextual to the video being played. And AdSense users will not be able to pick from any YouTube videos, but only videos from content providers who have signed an agreement with YouTube. So what this is the content providers, I'm sure, are going to be major companies that are putting ads on YouTube, and they're just going to redistribute them through AdSense. So, no, I am not going to be running any Google AdSense video ads on my website. Sorry. Can you imagine having that on there and having your own media in the middle of the page, and all of a sudden this ad starts running while your media is being loaded up? Can you just imagine how upset people would get? I just can't even fathom it. I really can't. TechCrunch is reporting Nine Inch Nails has really done a lot today to help seal the record industry's coffin by making an announcement that they are now free agents. They're no longer tied to any recording contracts, and that their newest album that's coming out next year more than likely is going to be distributed by them online, and it's going to be a whole different ball game. So if a big popular band, you know, this is, you know, they are, if I remember correctly, they do industrial rock. If they can do this and basically say bye-bye to the record companies, you know, this is something that, you know, we all need to pay attention to, because the bands are starting to figure this out. And, you know, they've been trying to get out of their contract for a while, so it's obvious they've made it happen. So if there's a comment here in this file, it says, if two of the biggest acts in the industry can see the digital writing on the wall and totally embrace it, then the old way of doing business is broken. Why can't the labels? Oh, so I guess it's Radiohead was another company that, or another band, another band that had broken away are now free agents. So with Radiohead and Nine Inch Nails are showing that this is a business model of the future, feared by entrenched interests, isn't arriving sometime in the horizon. It's touching down now. And I think we're starting to see that with the new Amazon service as well. Have any of you played with that? Oh, my goodness. Talk about, they did a good job. The Amazon music folks, they really done a good job over there. And very seamless process. I was even able to get to some music that I bought via the Amazon Music Store right into iTunes and onto my iPod. Very, very cool. Nice service. DRM free. It's really the way to go. So check it out if you haven't already. Hey, new news coming out on the OEM pricing for Windows Home Server has come into focus. It's at between $180 and $190. If my good friend out there is still willing to hook me up with what he said he was going to hook me up with, hey, I'm ready to write you a check. But those of you that want to roll your own Windows Home Server, you can now get it available at buy.com and Newegg. So this is nice to see. And some people are complaining about the price, but here's how I want you all to think about this Windows Home Server. And I'm very serious here. If you're a Windows user, if you have a couple of computers in the home, you're definitely going to want to buy this, especially if you've got an old junk machine that will meet the specs and that you can run on yourself and jam, you know, three or four hard drives in. It has to be a bare bones machine that can run some drives, and it really doesn't take a lot of horsepower. You just need storage. You're definitely going to want to get this application, because when I blew out a hard drive on my laptop when I was running the beta, I was able to rebuild the machine in 2 hours and be back up and running 100% from what I was at. That's priceless, folks. How many of you have had a machine go down and then spent an entire weekend getting it right again? Loading the operating system, loading the Vian virus, if you can find the legitimate version, you don't have to go out and buy it again. You know, loading all the different applications, you know, resubscribing to stuff. It is an absolute nightmare. Windows Home Server is going to be the way to go. It really, really is. I need to become a reseller to sell that in this show. can't wait. Can't wait to get my hand on the official copy of this and reprovision the machine. I've got it right here. It's in a closet. It's waiting to go. cannot wait. I really can't. In the hardware front, Seagate has announced the momentous 5400 PSD laptop hybrid drive. Oh, I so want one of these. This, my friends, is really going to change things. Seagate has jumped into really a new era of digital storage, where this hybrid hard drive has on it 256 megs of flash memory, and then you can buy an 80, 120, or 160 gig capacity drive, and it's very, very smart. What it does is it stores stuff in the flash memory that is used on a regular basis. So the speed of the flash memory allows the, you know, a lot of that low-level stuff to take place without accessing the hard drive. And the hard drive itself is going to consume less, 50% less power. So that's great for those of us that have very power-hungry machines. You're going to get more time out of your laptop. So this is going to be the drive to get. Now I'm looking down here if I can see a price on this thing. I don't see a price yet, but it's saying here it features 256 megs of flash memory, internal data rate of 44 megabits per second, SATA 1.5 gigabit per second interface, 5400 RPM speed, and acoustics of 2.3 bells and idle and 2.9 bells during seeks. So relative quiet drive, but the big thing is the flash memory. I think this is going to be really what we're going to see here very soon. That all drives are going to have flash memory in them. It just makes sense. But let's get the ante up. Let's not just put 256 megs in this bad boy. Let's put 4 or 5 gigs of flash memory in there, and let's really make something happen. I think I saw a article today, and I don't have it linked up in the show notes, where someone was selling how big was the drive? It was 160, was it 160 gig solid state drive? I think that's maybe what it was, and it was $19,000. So, you know, this is not, the pricing on this stuff is not going to come down quickly. But it is we are heading in the right direction. Let's see if I can find that link and put it in the show notes tonight. No guarantees, but I think I saw it over on Gizmodo. For those of you that are interested in that 19K, 160 gig solid state drive. Over on Consumer Law and Policy blog. Just imagine if you get a cease and desist letter from someone. And, you know, while getting a cease and desist is generally, you know, not good news, and generally sometimes you can ignore them because it's just someone trying to strong-arm you, this particular company called DirectBuy is a company that claims to offer deals on furniture and home supplies by letting consumers buy directly from the manufacturer. Apparently, the company has got some very unhappy customers, so they had been posting some information on a website called infomercialscams.com, and the company sent a cease and desist letter. And within the cease and desist letter, what their plan was here was to put a copyright notice within the cease and desist, so that if the company that received the cease and desist cease and desist letter, if they got this and were going to put it online, the copyright notice would allow them to come back in again and have a DMCA takedown of that particular notice. So basically, it hasn't worked, and it's gotten a more negative publicity here. So I'll have the link up in the show notes for you to read, but imagine that. You get a cease and desist letter from a company, and they put a little copyright notice on there so that if you post it on a blog as a way of getting back, they can come back in and try to smack you down through a DMCA. But the problem is they didn't even have a registered copyright on the paper. So that was part of the thing that people were laughing at them as well. Now, I've got my little Anna. What are you playing here? My daughter's in here. She's right beside me playing on the computer. It looks like you're playing some. What are you actually playing?
Minecraft.
Are you over on Disney.com? It seems to be the sight of the day. My 3-year-old's been on here on Disney.com today. Now my 11-year-old is. So did your mother just stick her head in here and said you need to go to bed? Was that what she said to you? Okay. All right. She's been hanging out listening to me doing the show. So it's not too late here. They're off on a little, they're in a round-the-clock school year. So they've been on vacation for the last couple of weeks. They go back to school on Wednesday. So this is their kind of almost last night of being able to stay up really late. But last couple stories here. This one's going to crack you up. And this happened in the UK. So if you play your radio loud enough for your neighbor to hear it, is that copyright infringement? Apparently, if you live in the UK, that's the deal. It's what's happened here is that there was a car repair place where the mechanics were working in the shop and they were playing their radios a little bit too loud, and the customers in the customer service waiting room could hear that music being played. And what has happened is that the performance societies are suing these companies for playing music without a license. So this car repair place has been sued to pay up because, you know, they're playing performance radio that, you know, demands that the Performing Rights Society in the UK gets some money. This is out of control. So if you're telling me if I have my radio on in my house and my neighbors next door can hear me playing my radio, that this group could come in and try to collect money from me because I'm having a performance. Folks, this world is going out of control. This is the epitome of, I just can't believe it. It really is. You know, what about if you're in an apartment with thin walls? You know, what if you're driving with the radio on with your windows open? What if you're in a cubicle at work? Please, this is becoming totally, totally silly. Yes, this is really happening. I'm amazed. I really am. I am really, really amazed. Okay, that wraps up the regular content for tonight. I do have some voicemails here to play, and I have plenty of comments that have come in via email as well. So we'll get into those here in just a moment, but let's go ahead and play these voicemails. As always, you can send comments to the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Again, 619-342-7365. Or you can send an email to geeknews@gmail.com. Here comes the first audio comment.
Hey, Todd. This is Andrew Darlow.
Hey.
It was great seeing you and the whole Blueberry team at the podcast and New Media Expo.
Yes, it was.
It's also really nice to meet your mom. It looked like she had a great time.
She did.
And I know she worked really hard for the team, which I especially learned by listening to Sherry Cast number 22.
Yes,
when
little
your mom
secret
was
there,
in Hawaii.
Huh?
Yep. I don't want to give it away, but that was a great podcast.
Thanks.
And if people remember the Geek News Central, which involved your son and the man with the blue pants, I think people might also want to listen to the Sherry Cast number 22.
Yeah, funny.
So that's all I'll say. Also, I sent you a link to Digital Life 2007 Highlights, which was a show that happened in New York City about the same time as the Podcast Expo. A lot of really cool stuff, especially if you like cell phones. And I also mentioned I would let you know when my new book about inkjet printing will finally start shipping, and that will be Tuesday, so officially today. And you can find out more about that at imagingbuffet.com. Aloha, Todd, and I hope to see you and your mom very soon. Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you so much, and thanks for the pictures that you sent as well, of the, you know, the links you sent to me, the pictures you shot at the show. I definitely appreciate that. Actually, I got a link to your book today as well, so I'm going to put those up in the show notes. Thanks for being a great fan of the show and of course, a very good friend as well. So, Andrew, take care, and I look forward to seeing you seeing you at the next event that you and I are hanging out at. So, appreciate it. All right, let's move on to the next audio comment here.
Hi, Todd. It's David from the United Kingdom.
Hey, David.
How are you? Hope
good.
You're well. I've been listening to your show for about two months now. Stumbled across it using podcasting on the Nokia N95.
Cool.
Very good. I like it. Keep up good work. I decided to listen to you because I know technology in America is different slightly in time to the UK. So I was obviously catching up on where you are compared to where we are over here in the UK. I do listen to the show quite regularly and usually while I'm driving around in my car. But keep up the good work and I'll speak to you at some point soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for the great comment. I appreciate it. And I'm glad you're using and are a big fan of that Nokia N95. Great phone, yeah? So how do you like using their podcasting directory? Is that working out well? Apparently you found the show, so you know we must have done something right there with them. And we were able to get all of the our communities added to the Nokia podcasting directory out at the Consumer Electronics Show. So I'm glad you were able to find us and are able to consume the show through your phone. Okay, moving on here to the next voicemail.
Hey, Todd, this is Mike Willis from Mike's Hot Dish.
Hey, Mike.
And I was wondering what your thoughts are on Mint. In case you're wondering, I didn't talk about the website, mint.com, personal financial manager, or basically clicking on the Internet is what it looks like. But my really big concern on that is that it's on the web. I'm not in control of that data. And so thus, you know, how truly prone are they to attackers or protected from hackers are they? You know, all that kind of stuff. So I was just wondering what your thoughts are on such a beast. And, you know, they have some really good, cool-looking features and stuff, but I'm really leery about trying it out just because of some of those concerns. I just want to know kind of what your thoughts were on that. And if anyone's looking for some great music, check out the Next Generation of Radio.
Hey, thanks for that. And I think you got cut off. Next Generation of Radio. What's the website? Hey, far as Mint goes, you know, I don't know. I would never, personally, and I don't know anything about the service, to be honest with you. I've heard about it. And I've actually loaded the webpage up here while you were making a comment. And I would never, ever, 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 ever have any of my financial information on some online service. Now, I have used in the past for personal income taxes. I've used QuickBooks Online through their IRS submitting service. And I think that's the extent of what I've used online financially. You know, I even have a special thumb drive that I have all of my QuickBooks and Quicken data on. When I unload that application, the stick gets pulled out of the machine and it essentially goes in my little go box. So in case we have to make a fast evacuation, we can. I do back that up to the external hard drive every month that goes in the safety deposit box. But you know, I don't even trust my financial data, you know, with all the account information and everything. You know, I'm probably a little bit too anal on that, but, you know, I don't even store that data on my own PC because you never know what could happen. And I've got it tied to, you know, there's a lot of data there. It really, really is. And if someone got a hold of it, wouldn't be good. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just overreacting. I'm sure some people are rolling their eyes because they probably, you know, have their Quicken database files right on their PC with no issue. But I've just had too many hard drives go south. I've had too many bad things happen in the past. Not necessarily hacker-wise, but that kind of data, I keep it somewhere where it's relatively safe. And those drives definitely are relatively safe. So I don't know who's calling here. Let me answer the phone. All right, back at you here about 3 seconds later. It was for my wife. I don't know why people are calling this late in the evening. It doesn't have to drive you crazy. You know, when people call after 9 o'clock, it's 10 here, but, you know how ladies are. They get to yakking, and that's just the way it is. All right, here's the last voicemail for tonight.
Hey, Todd, Clint Hall calling from Houston, Texas. Just heard your bit on the podcast about Apple and how they're locking out third-party developers from developing anything for the iPhone, as well as threatening to brick any iPhones that are cracked for using on T-Mobile or any carrier other than AT&T. For one thing, I think Apple has definitely shot themselves in the foot, and I'm a Nokia fan myself. I am calling you from a Nokia N75, and the nice thing about Nokia phones is that the newer Nokia phones, like the 6682, 6620, and some of the N-series phones run the Symbian operating systems, which allow for running of accessible software for the blind. And I'm getting a program called Talks for this Nokia phone, which opens up a whole world of cell phone features for people who are blind or visually impaired. Anyway, and also, Todd, under the category of you know you are a geek when, be sure to include in that one, you know you are a geek when you take with you for light reading on the bus to work a copy of your manual for your new printer that you bought on Sunday. Have a great day. Enjoy the podcast. Look forward to more.
Hey, thank you for calling, and appreciate your comments. Really do. Yes, that definitely is, you know, you're a geek when, you know, speaking of blind accessibility, this is quite a interlude here. I got an email from Daryl Shandro. He's a long-term listener to the show. He's been with us almost from the beginning. And matter of fact, I haven't had an email from Daryl in a long time. So, Daryl, I'm glad you're still with the family here. I really am. I appreciate it. But he's got a concern here that I want to share with all of you. And I'm big into making sure that, you know, what we do at Raw Voice is our technology are accessible to the blind. And but anyway, I'll read here what he has to say. Hey, dear Todd, I'm a longtime listener to Geek News Central since practically the very beginning of the podcast. I hope you consider reading this note on your show, and that you or others in the audience may have some bright ideas for effectively dealing with this potentially serious situation. As I believe you already know, I'm a blind computer user and accessibility evangelist. A close friend of mine is a database developer for a state university. He is also blind. The university is considering switching to Oracle PeopleSoft platform for conducting virtually all campus business. While the end-user components may be largely accessible, it has come to our attention that the developer components are not, and that no plans are currently in the works to make them usable with any existing assistive technology. Boy, that's not good news for a database developer that's blind, is it? Anyway, he goes on to say, if the university moves forward on the implementation of PeopleSoft without reasonably accommodating my blind friend's needs, then he will quite likely lose his job. He has a wife and two children. Is it right for my friend with a stellar performance record to lose the ability to put food on his table simply because he is blind and he is locked out of the ability to perform his duties because of a piece of computer software? All ideas and insights would be very much appreciated. Best regards, Daryl. You know, Daryl, first of all, this is really a tough one, and I'm not a lawyer. But, you know, it looks to me like if your friend is, I highly doubt that the university will be able to fire him. I just can't see them being able to do that because of a change. I don't know. This is really, really a tough one. I'm sure it is. Now, is there anyone out there that has any contacts with the folks at Oracle's PeopleSoft? If they do, love to hear from someone. And, you know, there's got to be a way for this to work. And if it doesn't, I think the university is going to have to accommodate your friend and do something to make sure that he has a job. If they don't, I think he would almost have a discrimination suit against the university. So is there anyone else there that got some ideas and any suggestions for Daryl and his friend on this particular issue? It's really tough. You know, the guy's got, you know, great skills, it sounds like. And a software change is going to, you know, make him unable to do his job that he does. Not cool. Not cool at all. It just goes to show you the importance, folks, of, you know, making sure that software websites, et cetera, are accessible. And there are so many websites that have things on them now that cause roadblocks for visually impaired people. It's a big, big impact out there. It really, really is. So, Daryl, you know, my thoughts and prayers are out for your friend, and I hope that there's a solution that's found, and I hope somebody in the audience comes up with something. But thank you for your email. I definitely appreciate it and hope we can get some responses back. Got an email from Dan. He says, "Hey, Todd, great show as always. I've been a member of the Ohana since day one. I don't believe I miss a single show. I love to hear about your family and stories you tell, not to mention all the tech news you bring to us every show, plus the off-the-wall stuff you come up, which is pretty entertaining in itself. And, well, even that wacky laugh of yours cracks me up." Yeah, someone said I need to trademark that. And I guess it is wacky. So anyway, I'm a big podcast listener. I work a four-on, four-off, 12-hour shift as an overhead refinery crane man. My friend, you definitely make some money. Those guys, I don't even want to know how much you make. But anyway, you work a 12-hour shift as an overhead refinery crane man, and I'm stuck in a 6x6 cab around 80 feet in the air. So I have several podcasts I listen to via my iPhone to help me keep company, and it sure helps pass the time of day. I figure I listen to around 40 hours of podcasting a week, so thank you for your part in that. And yes, my iPhone does have AT&T on it, but that's all that is available in my area. Man, no worries. I'm not going to smack you around because you've got AT&T. That's for sure. But he says, "The main reason I'm writing, Todd, is that in show number 306, you said you have switched over to Thunderbird for your email. Although Thunderbird is okay, I'm wondering if you ever tried Windows Live Mail. It works with Windows XP and Vista, and much like Outlook does. It also has an RSS feed reader built in, but unlike Outlook, it uses very little resources, so you might want to look it over as well. I do remind all listeners that it is in beta, as with most software these days, and they pay close attention when installing it because it will become your default search engine again." Ugh. "Just like most software these days does, simply uncheck that option. I run Live Mail on all 5 of my PCs, and I've never had a problem with it since its release. Sorry for the rambling, but I just want to let you know the rest of the Ohana know about Windows Live Mail. Keep up the great work and on what you're doing with this great new media we now have to turn to. Thanks, Dan." Hey, Dan, you know, I'm not a big, and I guess I haven't tried it. I need to probably go in and look at it. I am very, very big on having my media with me. Having all my data with me, and it's a holdover from having times when I wasn't connected to the internet and being able to go in and find email and respond to stuff. And I'm assuming, and tell me if I'm wrong here or not, but doesn't Live Mail require you? Isn't like you happen to be on Gmail online? It's an online-based thing, and you have to have a net connection to get access to your email. I cannot deal with. I have to have the data on my PC. Now, if they have an option where it can be stored locally, and I can access it and do all the things I do with Outlook, it may be worth a look. But definitely thanks for the suggestion. I'm sure you'll give me some feedback, and if I get time here in the next day or so, maybe I'll go ahead and give the beta a run and see how it works, and maybe even I don't know what does it cost? Does it cost a monthly subscription fee? I'd hate to do that and pay monthly. Thunderbird's working so good so far, so I guess we'll keep it open as an option. Got an email from Wendy, and Wendy was the one that just says, "Hey Todd, is there any way you can put all the iPhone news in one long statement as opposed to dotting the comments throughout the podcast? I am never going to buy an iPhone nor an Apple product. They're no better than Microsoft, and actually quite worse when it comes to being able to customize a product." That is true. She says, "My wish is to be able to fast forward through the I comments and not have to hear all the hype. Thanks. Love your show, Wendy and Chico." You know, Wendy, I'm not hyping it too much. It's become an eye brick for many people. But thanks for your comments. And you heard me mention earlier in the show, and I'll definitely try to clump it all together so that you can fast forward through the pertinent information that I'm passing through. I got an email from Jim. He sent me a link to a Space Age Inventions that you probably use via available via CNN. I have that up in the show notes. And I also got an email from Andrew about his new book, and it's on Imaging Buffet. It's an inkjet tips and techniques, just about to start shipping here in a few days. And so I'll have that up in the actual show notes as well. So good luck, Andrew, on your book sales, and I hope that you sell a lot of copies. I definitely will be ordering one. So again, thanks for your comment earlier via voicemail as well. All right, I think we're done. All right, folks, it's been great. I hope that all of you got something out of the show. Send your comments, positive, negative, bashes, whatever, to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Send your tips, tricks, and great article links to me as well. Definitely appreciate those when you guys send them out. I'll give you credit for them on the show, of course. And as always, thanks for being part of the HANA. Those of you that have checked out the show for the first time, stay subscribed. Subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you're using, or get it via the Nokia website or via, you know, wherever you're getting your podcast media. Stay subscribed. And until next time, everyone, take care and aloha.